this week on You're Saying It Wrong.
Washroom is ubiquitous here. In fact, my son years ago was working at Strand Bookstore in New York. Guy comes in and goes, excuse me, can you tell me where the washroom is? And my son said, oh, you know, welcome, I'm from Canada too.
Canadian English. It's not just American English with funny spellings. That's this week on You're Saying It Wrong from KMUW Studios.
Good morning. It's Friday, August 21st. I'm Beth Golay, and this is Wichita's Early Edition from KMUW News. A new music festival is coming to Wichita this weekend, and it features exclusively homegrown talent. More on this weekend's Wichita Forever Fest after the news. The Kansas football player who died on the first day of practice earlier this week is a 17-year-old whose family has deep ties to the community. Sam Zeff is following the story.
Rylan Reese was a junior at Pawnee Heights High School, about 40 miles southwest of Great Bend. Pawnee County Attorney Doug McNett told KCUR Rylan's mother volunteered for the school district and his father was a former Pawnee County undersheriff. McNett said in a statement, "My heart is broken for them." Rylan died Tuesday during the team's first workout. No cause of death has been determined, but with the family's consent, McNett ordered an autopsy. Unlike four other high school and college football players who have died in Kansas since 2018, Rylan is not a big lineman. He's listed as a 140-pound fullback and wide receiver.
That was Sam Zeff reporting. Adult care homes are discharging residents to hospitals during medical or mental health emergencies and then refusing to let them return to the care facility. Kansas State House reporter Zach Boblett has more.
The practice known as hospital dumping is happening at adult care facilities licensed only by the state. Federally licensed adult care facilities have stiffer penalties for hospital dumping than those licensed solely by the state. Last year, the Topeka Capital Journal reported that half of the nursing home investigator positions with the state were unfilled. Kansas long-term care ombudsman Haley Ardoyne tells lawmakers she's heard from some state-licensed homes that they view penalties as a risk they're willing to take.
Homes are willing to take the lower state fine and have called it the cost of doing business.
She worries hospital dumping in Kansas may be underreported. At the Kansas State House, I'm Zach Boblett.
More children and families are needing food assistance programs because of higher food costs. But as Rachel Schnelly with the Kansas News Service reports, changes to the programs are causing a roadblock in Kansas.
Last year's One Big Beautiful Bill made significant changes to food programs like the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. At least 7,000 Kansans lost their benefits last month, partly because of delays in processing applications. It's the biggest drop in numbers since the bill has been enacted. Jessica Kerr with Kansas Appleseed says more people are needing food assistance because of high food costs.
At the same time that people might be losing their benefits or wages, maybe not keeping up in the same way that we've needed to.
Kerr says the emphasis on payment error rates are causing processing delays, which means people lose benefits unexpectedly. For the Kansas News Service, I'm Rachel Schnelly in Pittsburgh.
The Kansas Sports Hall of Fame has preserved the state's athletic history for 65 years. Now, its home at the Wichita Boathouse is up for discussion. KMUW's Roger Nomer has more.
Bill Koch's America Cube
Wichita
Foundation recently asked the Wichita City Council to get out of its boathouse lease. If the council accepts, the Sports Hall of Fame might lease directly from the city, move to another location, or exist only online. The hall formed during the state's centennial and has uniforms from Jim Ryan and Lynette Woodard. Executive Director Richard Konzum says the hall needs a better revenue source and more foot traffic to survive.
We've got to determine what's going to be best for the Sports Hall of Fame, and right now we don't know the answer to that.
The city council deferred a decision until early September. They are debating who should pay for the building's roof repairs. For KMUW News, I'm Roger Nomer.
Wichita officials broke ground Thursday for the city's first new fire station in 17 years. Fire Station 23 will be at Pawnee and Mays in southwest Wichita and is expected to open next year. Jose Ocades is a Wichita Fire Battalion Chief. He says the new station will help improve fire response times in the area.
The city has grown, and I think just adding this fire station is just going to be the first step to adding more protection that is needed throughout the city.
Ocades says the station design also supports firefighters' health and wellness. The more than $5 million station will include a separate decontamination area and a new alarm system that progressively increases in volume and brightness of lights, also known as a cardiac-friendly warning system. The Wichita City Council and Sedgwick County Commission will hold their final hearings on the 2027 budget. Wichita City leaders will take public feedback on the proposed $800 million budget on Tuesday night. The budget includes increases for library staffing, new police dash cams, and one-time funding for the Second Light Homeless Shelter and Service Center. A hearing on the city budget is set for 6 p.m. Tuesday at City Hall. The following day, the County Commission will have its final hearing on its budget at 9 a.m. in the Ruffin Building. The county is considering an almost $660 million budget. The Kansas State Board of Education is considering limits on how much students use school-owned devices. The state banned student cell phones in school as of this fall. Now education officials are considering restrictions on how much technology schools use in class. State board members discussed potentially tying a device ban to accreditation standards for public schools. The board is aiming to adopt guidelines on technology usage before the end of the year. Some school districts are also considering policy changes at the local level. Via Christi has announced the president of its newest hospital in the area. Ascension Via Christi named Lindsay Coster as president of the recently acquired St. Peter Hospital in Derby. She will start in the role next month. Coster is a licensed social worker with 20 years of experience in healthcare and operational leadership. She has been with Via Christi since 2015, most recently at St. Joseph. St. Peter Hospital is the former Rock Regional Hospital in Derby. Via Christi acquired it in June and renamed it. We'll be back after this.
Support for KMUW comes from Fidelity Bank, a local team of commercial banking professionals who are honored to serve and ready to lend online at fidelitybank.com.
So we'd like to dedicate this one to all the girls of Winfield.
On August 29th at 7 p.m., we'll take a dive into the archives of the Walnut Valley Festival. Hear sets from the 1970s from musician Brian Bowers and bands Rice Straw and Hot Rise. I'm Jonathan Huber. Join me August 29th at 7 p.m. here on 89.1 KMUW for Walnut Valley Festival, The Early Years.
This is Wichita's Early Edition. I'm Beth Golay. A new music festival is coming to Wichita this weekend. The Wichita Forever Fest takes place Saturday in multiple venues across the city. While citywide music festivals give people a chance to enjoy live music, this event specifically showcases local Wichita talent. Nick Carswell has more.
There are lots of opportunities to enjoy live music at summer festivals across Kansas, but Wichita Forever Fest, happening August 22nd, stands out for a number of reasons. It features exclusively homegrown talent presented in local venues, and started as an idea between two local artists. Musician and one of the festival organizers, Emmett Joseph, explains where the idea came from.
Our co-founders, Keo Fletcher and Patrick Heath, got together, had coffee, and Keo had this idea of creating this, you know, for the community, by the community music festival. And initially it was going to be smaller, but it just kept growing. I think we're actually up to 105 bands now. 10 venues, all happening at the same day. These are all exclusively Wichita-affiliated artists, too. So there's no one from outside that hasn't lived or kind of formed their artistic, creative side in Wichita. I think it's incredible how diverse the scene has been here that I've been able to see. Like, I didn't know about a good amount of that. And then now going through and listening to people, they really have their stuff together. They take music seriously.
By centering local talent, Wichita Forever Fest stands to have a unique impact on the local music scene. But the event's design also moves the focus away from selling tickets or relying on alcohol sales. As Jen Steinacker, one of the event organizers, explains, it's about something different for the community.
This festival is all about accessibility and opportunity, not just for both the artists that are performing on stage. We have live artists that will be creating art at these locations as well. This is a decentralized festival, so these locations are not all within walking distance. Sets start as early as, I believe, 11:30 a.m. and go all the way until, I believe, 1:30 a.m. technically on Sunday. So you can be crazy and go all day if you want to and hop around. It's completely free to the community. Almost all of our venues are family friendly as well. And so it is just an opportunity to discover local music and all of the creatives here in Wichita. And yeah, you can do that for 14 hours straight if you want to.
One thing that's clear from the grassroots effort of Wichita Forever Fest, local artists are hungry for the chance to showcase and to collaborate with their music community. Here's Emmett Joseph describing just one reaction from an artist who recently returned to the city.
Delima Captain is someone who is from Wichita and has been in Kansas City for many years and has just returned to Wichita. And the second I told her about the festival, the first thing she said was, "How can I help? Let me dive in. Where can I plug in? What can I do to support?" And if you haven't heard Captain, that's K-A-P-T-E-N, and they're incredible. I would call it jazz fusion soul. But it's dark. It has a really kind of brooding element to it. And we're incredibly, incredibly grateful to have her in Wichita now. With every kiss, goodbye. Mama whispered, hold the veil to the fire. It feels like it's all come together. And I think what it says, not just to Wichita, but to the rest of the country, is that Wichita has an incredible, vibrant and diverse music scene that's ready to show the rest of the country what we have.
I'm Nick Carswell.
Thanks for joining us for Wichita's Early Edition. We'll be back again on Monday. For KMUW News, I'm Beth Golay.
Wichita's Early Edition is part of the NPR Podcast Network.
This week on Marginalia, we speak with Chris Bojalian about his novel, The Amateur.
Often, not always, the books that I write demand that the main character makes the sort of emotional journey that I'm not sure most men are willing to make.
Saturday morning at 11:30 on 89.1 KMUW.
The fatal shooting of a teenager at a protest in Seattle has gone unsolved for 6 years.
This is open in your face. How are there no answers?
Our investigation has uncovered new evidence and witnesses who say they've never talked to police.
Did police ever call you?
Not once.
Listen to We Keep Us Safe, a new true crime series on the Embedded podcast from NPR.